Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher, Ohio's 69th governor, was officially sworn in this morning just after midnight. Let's listen to John Kasich take the oath of office.
I, John Kasich.
I, John Kasich.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I shall faithfully and honestly.
That I shall faithfully and honestly.
Discharge the duties of the office.
Discharge the duties of the office.
Of governor of Ohio.
Of governor of Ohio.
And shall support, protect, and defend.
And shall support, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Ohio.
And the Constitution of the State of Ohio.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Governor.
That was a Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor, recently sworn in herself. Introducing the governor on this day of the public, I guess, ceremonial inauguration of Ohio's 69th governor, John Kasich. We're going to look back at those that have gone before. The former dean of the State House Press Corps, Lee Leonard, is with us. Lee's Ohio State House reporting career spanned 36 years. He reported for United Press International from 1969 through 1990 and for the Columbus Dispatch from 1991 through 2005. He also wrote a weekly column, a collection of which was published last year in his book, A Columnist's View of Capitol Square. He covered 11 national political conventions, 5 governors, and 9 inaugurations. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Thanks, Ann. Good to be here.
Also with us is Ohio Historical Society research archivist Tom Reeder. He's here to help us reflect on, I guess, the most recent inaugurations. But, Tom, you can take us back a little bit farther, and we appreciate you joining the program today.
Well, thank you, Ann. Glad to be here.
The first inauguration, do we know anything about what it was like?
It was conducted in Chillicothe, Ohio, in December. Governor Edward Tiffin was Ohio's first governor, and in those days, the governor addressed the joint session of the General Assembly and made brief remarks after his swearing in. And like Ohio governors in that time period, called for establishment of a statewide school system and a very common theme for Ohio, building roads.
We've been doing that for years.
He also wanted to encourage immigration into the state of Ohio to boost the population, and called upon an active militia to protect the frontier.
Did they do State of the State back then, or was the inaugural address more important? Because I'm not sure how important it is today.
Also, as part of the 1802 Constitution and subsequent 1850 Constitution, the governor was required to submit an annual message to the General Assembly, standing as like a State of the State address, and following in the tradition set by Thomas Jefferson, these were delivered to the General Assembly, but not given before it by the governor.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about the inauguration. The ceremonial swearing-in ceremony will occur in about an hour. It will air live on 89.897 NPR News if you want to listen to it in real time. We're talking about previous ones and, from long ago, and maybe some more recent ones with Lee Leonard, retired State House reporter, former dean of the State House Press Corps, and Tom Reeder. He is an Ohio Historical Society archives and library reference archivist. 614-292-8513 if you want to make that call. So what actually is in the Constitution that dictates how an inauguration is supposed to occur?
Very little, other than what listeners heard in terms of the oath of office, other than it. According to the 1850 Constitution, it take place on the second Monday in January.
Now, Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor, did the honors of swearing in the governor, but it doesn't have to be the Chief Justice.
No, it does not.
Bob Taft, his 19-year-old daughter, Anna, did.
Well, I think she was holding the Bible.
She was holding the Bible. Okay.
But any judge can.
It has to be a judge?
I believe so.
Okay.
But does it have to be at midnight?
No, it does not.
When did that start happening?
Well, you know, that's what I was going to ask, because in my recollections, they've made a big deal out of the idea that at first Kasich didn't want a public ceremony, but he wanted to be sworn in at the stroke of midnight. Mm-hmm. And my recollection is that some of the governors did have a private swearing-in ceremony early, and we never made a big thing of it because we knew it was going to take place again or later in the day. The only time we got concerned was if there was going to be some skullduggery that was used between midnight and noon the next day, that the so-called new governor was going to be able to do something.
Some kind of executive order
and
or something
out of state,
like that.
Out of sight of people. But this business of a private ceremony in the dark of night is not new, in my opinion.
It began with Governor James Rhodes swearing in for his third of four terms in 1975. The newly sworn in a Democratic legislature had passed a number of laws, and Rhodes was trying to make sure that he was in power at 1201 in case the outgoing governor, John Gilligan, was going to sign them so that this would clear up any legal issues as to whether the Gilligan signature or the Rhodes signature should be the legal one on pieces of legislation.
Now, the president is sworn in this way.
It is specified in the United States Constitution that it take place at noon.
Okay.
So the U.S. Constitution,
okay.
Yeah, settles that.
And but it's not specified in our Constitution, again, the state Constitution, so it's kind of any time you want to after midnight.
Yes, it's limited to day.
Did Governor Rhodes have then a ceremonial swearing in later that day?
Yes, he did. He was, again, suffering from throat problems. It was, I believe, a cold day.
Aren't they usual?
Well, but I mean,
this is a nice day compared to what that
was. Oh, really?
Oh, it was bitter cold. And the thing that I remember is that Rhodes had these garish boots on. He didn't have his business shoes, but he had these ugly green and greenish-yellow boots that he wore standing on the State House steps. And actually, some people feared for his health because he wasn't getting any younger at that time. And then later on, they started having him indoors.
Yeah,
first,
and that's
first, in the rotunda
and
as
then,
the backup site.
So that was in case of rain or something like that.
Yes.
Now, Governor Strickland and his swearing in was outside in the rain, if I remember correctly.
Yes, there was a damp drizzle.
It kind of makes you wonder, it's like, is this a manly thing or what's going on?
Yeah. Well, of course, there's also one other Jim Rhodes inaugural story. In 1971, before the inauguration of incoming Democratic Governor Jack Gilligan, Rhodes was in his office, and there were very few staff around, so the phone call went to him, and it was a woman asking directions on how to get to Columbus for the inaugural. And Governor Rhodes very patiently explained to her how to get from where she was to Columbus. And so that was just, there he was.
Those were the good old days, Holly.
Well, yeah. And
talk about having connection with your governor and your government.
And on that very same day, I distinctly remember when it was a transition that was not tense, but it was not jovial either. I mean, Rhodes was going out, Gilligan was coming in, and I still remember after all the shouting and hoopla had died down from the swearing in on the steps, and the guests were greeted and so on, Gilligan got the press corps and he invited him to come back in the governor's office and in the little office in the State House, mm-hmm. where on the first floor, where Rhodes had been sitting for 8 years, and Gilligan got behind the desk and he got in that chair and he leaned back and he got this little wry grin on his face and he says, "This is the first day of the new creation," and it was like,
wow.
our nightmares are over. I'm here. And so that was another little anecdote of how things go.
Hey, to our listeners, why don't you call in if you have any inaugural memories? I know there are a lot of you out there that have had experiences with inaugurations before, Ohio gubernatorial inaugurations. Did you ever participate in one? Did you ever sing at one? Did you ever in any way, did you help plan any of them out there? Give us a call and tell us what it was like, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. It wasn't such a big deal. Now, when did it start to become such a big deal?
After the Civil War, that's when the idea of a parade featuring the military units, the National Guard, local groups had begun to form bands, political clubs of the incoming governor were encouraged to participate. One of the interesting inaugurals was in 1884, Governor George Hoadley from Cincinnati. At his inaugural parade, the large number of people from the Democratic Club down in Cincinnati called the Duckworth Democratic League. Actually, it traces its origins all the way back to beginning of statehood. Raised such a ruckus during Hoadley's inaugural address that had to pause and ask the crowd to quiet down so that the governor could be heard.
And they were happy.
They were happy, yes.
Yeah.
These were his supporters making a large demonstration. Because following the Civil War, the Ohio Democratic Party had a tough time winning statewide elections with all the returning Union troops voting for their former Civil War commanders who were Republicans.
I think there's a group planning to protest at the swearing-in today in some way. I wouldn't be surprised. I know they have in the past, and maybe we can talk about some of the protests that occurred in the past, if there were any. When we return from this break, if you have a story to tell about inaugurations in Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
And be sure to stay with 89.7 NPR News beginning at noon for live coverage of the inauguration of John Kasich as governor. Ohio Public Radio's Statehouse News Bureau will present live coverage of the swearing-in ceremony and other activities from Capitol Square. Listen to John Kasich's inauguration beginning at noon today on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts. The 2011 lecture series kicks off with Ed Chappell of the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation, documenting the evolution of planned communities, Tuesday the 11th at 7 p.m. Details at mccoycenter.org.
And at 1 o'clock this afternoon, On Point begins on 89.7. The tragic shooting in Tucson and the political climate in the United States. That discussion at 1 on Point. 24 degrees currently, cloudy skies today, a high of 26, and a good chance of snow moving in tonight, 2 to 4 inches of snow on Tuesday. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. My guests this hour, Lee Leonard. He is a former dean of the Statehouse Press Corps. He is a book of his columns that he wrote over the course of several years, a columnist view of Capitol Square. Also, Tom Reeder of the Ohio Historical Society. He's a keen interest in state government and politics. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you want to join the conversation. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Bill from Powell, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. This applies more to Lee. I was going to ask Lee if he remembers anything from the inauguration of John Bricker, but what I'll ask him is if he remembers any stories about any tricks made by an outgoing governor to a new governor.
Actually, Tom might remember a story about John Bricker, but I'll answer the question, which was any tricks. No tricks that actually succeeded, I don't think. The incident that comes to mind was when Rhodes was leaving in 1983, January of 1983, and they had just built the second state office tower, now known as the Vern Reif Center for Government and the Arts. And Rhodes, actually, they hadn't built it. They were having a groundbreaking. Rhodes wanted to have the groundbreaking before he left office so he would get credit for it. And he was going to name it after Vern Reif, the legendary House Speaker, and Senator Paul Gilmore, who was at that time the Senate President, and he was a Republican, so you'd have a Republican and a Democrat. Well, on Inauguration Day, the rain poured down. They had the chair set up for this groundbreaking ceremony, and they were going to have the ribbon cutting, and all the dignitaries were going to get out there in chairs, and it was just typical Columbus winter weather. not even a day like today. This is crisp and cold, but this was nasty and rainy, and so they canceled it at the last minute, so there was no groundbreaking, and Dick Celeste was inaugurated as governor, and then he got to be able to have the groundbreaking on his own terms, and by that time he had decided it was going to be named after Vern Reif and Vern Reif alone. So that kind of qualifies as a trick. But it was a trick of nature.
I was thinking, Bill, too, I mean, we mentioned earlier that reporters want to be there at the swearing in because you never know if they're going to sign an executive order or do something behind the scenes like that. Is that the case? Has that been the case?
Well, someone mentioned to me the other day that Dick Celeste got sworn in that same year, the one that I was just talking about, and he wanted to change the Public Utilities Commission. And so he got sworn in at midnight so he could do that. But I don't remember. I remember that was one of the first orders that he issued, but I don't remember that it was something that made any difference whether he did it between midnight and noon or whether he did it afterwards. I think he did do it on the first day. He changed the makeup of the Public Utilities Commission.
Thanks, Bill, for the call. Yeah.
Well, yes, that is what happened. I mean, but no, the executive order was not issued between midnight and noon. It was issued after the ceremonial swearing in. So
it really didn't make any difference that way either. Carol from Columbus, welcome to the show. You participated in Richard Celeste's inauguration.
Yes, I did. I was a sign language interpreter, and I signed the whole inauguration for the deaf community. I was up there on stage standing right next to him doing the whole thing, and I believe he's the only governor that has done that.
I was going to ask if he might have been the first, because he had a sensitivity toward that kind of thing.
Very, very much so. He, in fact, even had an office of services for people with disabilities. And after he became governor, I worked in that office and interpreted many, many of his speeches. If it was a public speech, he had it put into sign language and had it interpreted. So he was totally accessible.
The Historical Society has photographs of Governor Bob Taft's swearing in, and there is a sign interpreter on stage, on the Ohio Theater stage, when he took the oath of office. So other Ohio governors have done it as well.
But you were the first.
Yeah, I believe she would have been the first.
I believe so. And Governor Rhodes was up on stage with him and cracking jokes, and it was just an awesome ceremony and he made sure everybody was able to understand what was going on. It was pretty awesome.
There are those who would say that Governor Rhodes needed an interpreter, but because sometimes he didn't always speak the English.
Is it easy to interpret something like that? Is he did he stick pretty much close to his script?
He stuck to the script pretty much. The swearing in, of course, is the same. And then his comments were whatever. And, yeah, you need to be aware of the political rhetoric and the meaning and all that, and which I had experience with. So for me, it wasn't too difficult. And it was very easy. He had a charm about him that just made it very easy to interpret for him.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Carol.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. If you have an experience with one of the inaugurations in the past, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I don't care if you waited tables. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Carol brings up a point. She says the swearing in is pretty much the same. Is it? Does it have to be the same?
In terms of
the language,
specified, yes. The language is there in both the Constitution and the Ohio Revised Code in terms of the governor upholding the laws of the United States and the state of Ohio, et cetera.
Very specific.
Yes.
Is it actually written down, an entire script somewhere, or is that?
No, actually they rely on what has gone before. I have remembered that we have had to scramble for what did previous governors say in terms of oaths of office.
How much do governors look to the past, do you think, to put on an inaugural spectacle, I guess, everything from the swearing in to the balls and that sort of a thing?
Well, each administration is a little bit different. Governor Strickland, in terms of his inaugural event out at the Ohio State Fairgrounds, the meal was themed around examples of state fair food, for example.
And it was pretty casual, too,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, it was more casual.
I remember I covered the Voinovich inaugurals, and they were pretty dressy. They were the first inauguration, there were three events. But they were mostly fundraisers, because I remember I went to one of the most expensive events and people were looking around for some food. They were just some bowls of potato chips and pretzels and a cash bar. Is that pretty typical, Lee?
Yes. they try to save money, and they're not trying to attract people based on the meal that they serve. Although they do have some, fancy events for the high rollers, but at the big cattle calls, that they don't go splurging on lobster and steak.
And Governor Voinovich, for the 1991 inaugural, you could buy various sorts of memorabilia, ranging from boxer shorts to others, and this was a way to help defray expenses.
That's right. Did they continue to do that? Was that
shot glasses and? Yeah. Plates and things like that, commemorative plates.
Uh-huh. Do they still do that, or did he start that? Was that something new?
Oh, I don't know if they still do it. I imagine it's like Tom said, that's their way to defray expenses.
The Gilligan administration had trivets that you could put cups on that with quotes from either the campaign speeches or the governor's inaugural address that you could pick up.
You know, I know that Governor Kasich has said he'll reveal the inauguration costs later. And we know that other incoming governors in New York and California, they've scaled down their ceremonies this month in lieu of the economy and the economics. And I know that George Voinovich, for his second inauguration, was much more low-key and scaled back from his first. Is that pretty typical over time?
Second inaugurals, yes, are pretty low-key affairs.
And during economic downturns, during the Depression, those kind of things, were they more were they sparer in their glamour?
Yes, although that during the 1930s, the parade still went on.
Now, there's not a parade today, right?
Yes, that's true.
Well, there, you know, this is all related to the idea that the supporters of the incoming governor, they want to make it have a certain amount of glamour and excitement to it. But on the other hand, they don't want to appear to be ostentatious. And so there is an attempt to hold things down and not appear to make it too out of control as far as spending goes.
Well, too, I mean, because of modern media, you can see so much more. I mean, back in the day, before television and 24/7 news coverage and that kind of thing, it wasn't as if people could sit in their TV in front of their TV and watch it.
No, you had to take the train to get to Columbus to participate in the inaugural.
Did people do that? Did they travel to Columbus? Ordinary people travel here to participate or to witness?
Again, if they were ardent supporters,
right,
they would make the trip as a way to cheer for their local person. Because the other thing to remember is that between the beginning of the 20th century and really the inaugural of John Bricker, very few Columbusites became governor. That was the large cities would be dominated by Cleveland, Cincinnati, but they were there were governors from all across Ohio.
614-292-8513. Have you attended an inaugural ball? Want to tell us about it? Give us a call, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Lee, what's your reminiscence? I mean, when you look back over those nine inaugural events that you covered, what was the splashiest?
Well, I'm stuck on that last comment about inaugural balls, and I'll throw one instant in, and that is that when Gilligan came in, everybody was, of course, the Democrats were just out of control because they had had Rhodes for 8 years, and then so that they were all hyped up, and they had the ball out at the fairgrounds, and Nancy Wilson was one of the entertainers.
Wow.
And people were so drunk and out of control that Nancy stopped right in the middle of her performance and gave the audience a tongue lashing for their rude and boorish behavior, and that was a memorable.
Which gives some credence to what Governor Kasich was saying about, well, he doesn't want people. He did originally they weren't going to let the press at the inaugural ball because people might not want to see them getting drunk and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing to remember is that not only in 1971 was Governor Gilligan inaugurated, but there was a Democratic Attorney General, William Brown, inaugurated. Old Joe Ferguson was inaugurated as Auditor of State. And since it was 1971, this was the year after the census, so the apportionment board was now, for the first time in a very long time, going to be controlled by Democrats. So this also contributes to the glee and euphoria of the day.
Lots to celebrate.
As far as the splashiest one, I asked the question, there's not one that stands out. They're all events that where the faithful come back and they are naturally excited about the prospects and the new governor, and it's like a family reunion for them. And there's a certain amount of pomp and circumstance, but I can't think of one that was exceptionally splashy.
Yeah, they're not. And like I said, the food, I mean, there's some where the big rollers, like you said, there's some things where they have pretty fancy fare, but when you go to the ones at the convention center, my recollection, where there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, I don't even think there was anything at the one I went to at the convention center. I went to one at one of the hotels because Voinovich had a three-ring circus for his inaugural gala. There were three of them, I think.
And that's odd when you think about that because he had the reputation of being just a skinflint as far as spending
money. Well, when you got there, I swear I saw people looking under the tables for food because believe it was just chips and pretzels.
Well, yeah, he followed Rhodes's advice on that because Rhodes, whenever he had a big event, it was cheese and crackers because They're there. Why spend the money on giving them a lot of food? Right.
We're going to take a quick break in a few minutes, but again, if you attended an inaugural ball, what was your impression of it? Were you disappointed? Did it seem like a lot of much ado about nothing, or were you going back and it felt like a family reunion? So give us a call, 614-292-8513. You know, not everybody gets to go to an inaugural ball. It's a pretty special event no matter what. So you can share your memories of inaugural balls from the past. I'd love to know, hear from somebody who went to Governor Strickland's last year, because in my recollection, having it at the state fairgrounds and doing what he did was probably one of the most unusual themes. I mean, it was very thematic, I suppose. They aren't usually that thematic, are they? They're just parties, big parties.
Right. I can't remember a thematic one. I can remember. I think that Celeste was the one who started them bringing cans of food, didn't he?
Yes.
Is that the case this year, do you know? I haven't seen anything.
For the food banks.
For the food banks.
Yeah.
Is that – I don't know if it's something they're doing this year or not. Because I really – the events, it wasn't easy to find a lot about the events anywhere. They seem pretty spare in their information. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Tuesday night at 10 on WOSU-TV, Frontline examines the uphill fight to rebuild Haiti in the face of deep-rooted corruption and intimidation. Watch Frontline Battle for Haiti Tuesday night at 10 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from City Scene Magazine, Columbus Arts, Entertainment, and Style Magazine. From art gallery galas to entertainment events, City Scene Magazine is on the scene and online at citycenecolumbus.com.
Stay right here on 89.7 NPR News in just about 20 minutes at noon. Join us for live coverage of the inauguration of John Kasich as Ohio's 69th governor. Ohio Public Radio's Statehouse News Bureau will present live coverage of the swearing-in ceremony and other activities from Capitol Square in Columbus. Listen to John Kasich's inauguration today at noon, right here on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Clouds today, a high of 26 degrees. A little snow tonight, a low of 19, and then snow likely throughout the day on Tuesday. An accumulation of 2 to 4 inches is expected. The snow continues Tuesday night. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. My guests this hour, Tom Reeder. He is from the Ohio Historical Society, and Lee Leonard, former dean of the Statehouse Press Corps and author of, he was a columnist for many, many years, too. And he has a book out of his columns. They're called, what is the name of your book, Lee?
A Columnist's View of Capitol Square.
Fittingly enough. Columnist's View of Capitol Square. That is bad that I couldn't find that.
And I couldn't find an inaugural column in there, but that was just the breaks. I mean, I remember writing about the inauguration.
Well, right, but that just tells me something, because I couldn't find it either, and I thought maybe I had missed something in your book. But the inaugurals really aren't. They don't really matter that much. There's not a lot written about them. There's not a lot recorded about them. The speeches tend not to be necessarily that memorable, particularly since they have the state of the state now.
Well, yet if you think about it, it's also is covered with symbolism because it reflects the orderly transition of power in a political democracy from one party to another. It shows a transition of government. It also is a new governor's first opportunity to tell the people what's his philosophy of governing and how he expects to involve the public in that administration. So you would think, yes, that there would be more attention paid to it.
But they sort of come and go. It might have something to do with the weather. We have an email from Paul. Lee will probably remember this better than anyone. Back before the remodeling, I guess, of the State House, Mary's restaurant used to be where the State House gift shop is today. Mary, with Cliff, always the obvious second-in-command, managed the shop for the blind services. They sold sandwiches, coffee, and donuts, basic fare. It was not unusual to see Vern Reif and others meeting down there for coffee with other legislators and staff members. Based on what I'd hear, a lot of strategy and legislation was born and evolved over coffee at Mary's. But I bet you the basement, Lee, wasn't necessarily where you saw much of the events during the inauguration in those days.
No, you saw it around on the first floor of the State House, which was where the governor's office is in the rotunda, and Mary's would be open on inauguration day, and people would be jammed in there. But the inauguration day is more for people to see one another and see people they haven't seen in a long time. Glad hand, fellowship, and just have a good time. And you talk about the State House, though. There was one time when the State House Rotunda was closed during the restoration, and that was when Voinovich had to go across the street to the Ohio Theater. And I don't remember whether he had – did he have his first one indoors also, Tom?
No, the first one was outdoors. And that's the one that featured the last parade. The second one, because of the renovations, it was moved across the street. And
and that's where it stayed, right?
Well, Taft was indoors, yeah.
Yes.
At the Ohio Theater.
Because Columbus was hit with a snowstorm right before the inauguration, and former Mayor Lashutka took some heat for as all mayors do. It's your fault the weather's bad. So the inaugural was hastily moved to the Ohio Theater, and it was such a hit that Bob Taft chose it for the site for his second one. It's a nice place, and it seats well over 1,000. And
it's right across the street.
Right.
Do you have to have tickets and that kind of thing to get, or can anybody just walk in? I think my recollection is you have to have a pass to get in.
Oh, still. Yeah. You have to have tickets.
So it's a little more closed off.
Yes.
Yeah. If they have it outdoors, though, they can have as many as will fit onto the State House grounds, and then the media is in that little bullpen that they keep you.
And, keep them herded.
Yeah. they you can see and hear, but you're restricted.
Email from Dolly. Through an odd series of events, my husband and I have ended up with tickets to tonight's event. We have no idea what to expect. The information provided just says 6 to 10 p.m. Is there a program of events, food, entertainment? We don't know. Do you? No, Dolly, I don't. I've been trying to find out, and I don't know. That's all I know as well, and I wish you could tell us. So probably not a lot of food, though, if it follows suit with others. Now, didn't it used to be more food involved? I mean, wasn't there a day, Tom, when it was?
Well, it would depend on the event.
Okay.
There would be more food for the people more identified as donors to the campaign, friends of the campaign, but for the public gatherings where the governor would meet the citizens of Ohio, it probably would be cheese and crackers or chips.
So, Dolly, make sure you snack before you go because you can't expect to get fed when you're there.
But nevertheless, if it's – and I don't know what the itinerary is for the Kasich folks, but they generally have a nice – in a nice hotel, a ball with a good dance band. I remember the Taft one where that's where we really got a chance to see Hope and Bob dancing with one another, and it was in a nice hotel. It was across the street at the the hotel across the street from the Capitol, and it was a good time. Yes, food and drink are in short supply, and the lines are long. But it's a chance to wear your best clothes and get out on the town and enjoy the night. Maybe there are other events that are not so dressy, but
this is the gala. This probably is pretty
gala.
Dressy.
Mm-hmm.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, I have here that Taft will take his ceremonial oath of office from his 19-year-old daughter, and I don't know what that means, Anna, at a noon ceremony, free and open to the public. Does say it's free and open to the public when Governor Taft was sworn in. He did... The Governor Voinovich was the first to break that tradition dating back to the Civil War to have his inauguration indoors at the Ohio Theater. And in 1991, he had the OU Marching Band, OU Marching 110 perform. So I don't know if that was at the event or not. I can't remember. I was there, but I can't remember if the band played at the swearing-in or what, Lee?
I think it did, because they do have bands there out on the Statehouse grounds. It's not like a marching parade, but they can have a band there and play. There's music. Sometimes there are high school choirs from favored cities. And in Kasich's case, it would be Westerville, but we don't know if that's happening.
What is your... As a reporter, Lee, was covering the inaugural such a big deal?
It was a big deal in that it was the first event of the year. It was the first event of the new creation, as it were, as Gilligan described it. it was a fresh start, unless it was a continuation of the governor, and then it wasn't so big because we already knew what that governor was like, and he was basically preaching to the choir, and we didn't think we were going to learn anything new, although they did try to throw new things into their speeches. But, this is new. Right now it's new because from what we hear, things are going to change in the way government is operated. And his relationship with the legislature and so on. So, yes, it is a big deal, and there will be a lot of good stories come out of it.
Steve, you're from Columbus, and you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I was at the Strickland inaugural in 2007, and I actually worked there as a volunteer there. Of course, it was out of the fairgrounds, and it was a great time. There was plenty of food. It wasn't fancy food. It was, I think you saw called it fair food, mm-hmm. Sandwiches and French fries, actually. But it was catered, so it was very good, and people were very excited. Remember, we'd been out of power for 16 years, so people were in a really good mood, and a lot of people were there from all over the state. We mingled, and like we said, camaraderie, so we had a great time.
Governor Kasich said he worried that if reporters were at the events that people wouldn't feel comfortable, like they couldn't party as hardy and all that kind of stuff. Was that the case at the Strickland inaugural gala?
Oh, no. We were all in a good, very good mood, very good party mood. Everyone was, very cheerful, and it was very enjoyable. So the governor was there, of course. We all danced, and all the newly elected. Remember, we had a whole slew of newly elected Democrats. So, I mean, the only word I could use to describe it was fantastic.
Well, that's probably what the Republicans feel today, because they have a whole slew of newly elected statewide elected officials as well. Steve, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, does it make a big difference, Lee, when there's such a sweep like that?
It generates excitement, and these folks are on cloud nine today.
Let's see, we have new auditor of state, new secretary of state, new attorney general, new state treasurer, all the way across the board, all new, and they're all being sworn in today as well.
It's a brand new ball game. Yeah.
It's a brand new ball game. 614-292-8513. Give us a call if you've been to another ball game you want to tell us about.
The Gilligan and Celeste first inaugural also were that type of festive occasion, because there was that type of sweep across the board.
What were those like? Do we know?
Well, again, Celeste had a number of different activities planned, formal and informal. It was to involve as many people as possible. There was also themed artwork commissioned for the inaugural, so it was a big deal.
Lee, do they usually have these events leading up to the inaugural?
Yes. Pre-inaugural events like they've had in the last couple of days.
As much as you can squeeze out of the occasion?
Yeah. It's an occasion for celebration. And, you talk about Celeste. Bear in mind that, once again, it was 8 years of Rhodes, and the mood had changed. Celeste was like the guy coming riding in on a white horse, just like John Kasich is today for the Republicans.
Do you think the Arizona shooting day before yesterday had any impact on sort of the security measures that are taken and that sort of a thing? Has security played a role in the inaugurations recently?
Well, we don't know because
they
won't tell you about that. But I bet underneath that they're plenty worried and that they have stepped up the security. That'd be my guess.
Is security always played a strong, big role in it, or is that just sort of a relatively modern problem?
I would think it would be a more of a modern problem, really going back to fears in terms of the 75, not from the 1975 inaugural with Jim Rhodes coming back into power only 5 years after the Kent State incident, and there was still political protest around. So I think it's from that point on the security has at the State House has stepped up.
I do remember that Gilligan had opened up the governor's office a lot, and that when Rhodes came back, they put a door behind the receptionist desk, and before it had been all open all the way down that corridor to where the governor's actual working office was.
In the old offices in the State House.
Yeah, and they put locks on the doors and a lot of security measures. And every time we asked about that, it always was for security reasons, and that there were people who said they had been sent by God to destroy the governor and things like that. Those episodes would happen, and it goes up and down. Right after an attempt on assassinating the president, there would be increased security consciousness. So that's why I say that today there's probably increased security.
In about 6 minutes, we're going to go live to live coverage of John Kasich's inauguration on 89.7 NPR News. So stay tuned, and we just have a few more minutes. If you have any calls, you want to email us with some recollections of inaugurations of the past, please do. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tom?
Well, in terms of with inaugural speech coming up soon, words that Ohio governors have used in the past have been words such as let us strive, let us look forward, let us, going together. Governor Dennison back in 1860, Governor Celeste in 1983, and Governor Taft in 1991 all used words of Ohio's accomplishment in terms of conquering and taming the new land that was Ohio and creating opportunity for economic advancement. Governors Rhodes and Celeste were very similar in terms of their use of the idea of the inaugural address of job creation, job promotion. Governors stretching back to the 1816 with Thomas Worthington have all used the inaugural address to either laud, commend, or work to promote a public education system for all Ohioans.
It tends to be very upbeat and positive then.
Yes, although Governor Voinovich in 1991 warned Ohioans that to expect less from their government than in years past. Governor Gilligan used the 71 inaugural to remind Ohioans of a shared sacrifice.
All economic downturns.
Yes.
So today probably will be that no doubt will be echoed in whatever message John Kasich dishes up today. Any good gaffes out there? Any mistakes? Anyone fall off the stage? Anything memorable in that way? Or do these things usually come off without a hitch?
Oh, I suppose there's always a gaffe or two. I can't think of one at the moment from the past, but yeah, anything can happen.
And then after the inauguration, tomorrow's a Tuesday, they get right to work usually, don't they?
Yes. Governor will be issuing executive orders and getting things rolling. And according to what I hear, they're getting ready to start passing bills.
Right off the bat, is that pretty typical, Tom?
It would depend on the makeup of the General Assembly being in sync with the governor. It appears that in this time around, the Speaker of the Ohio House, Bill Batchelder, and John Kasich are pretty much in tune, so that you would expect a little more rapid occurrences.
Yeah, there was one time when Taft was governor. I forget whether it was the start of his first or second term, but weeks went by, and Dick Finan, who was the president of the Senate, I remember him coming into the press room or being out in the hall and talking to him, and he said, "We need something to do." And there was no activity. It was like last year's legislative session.
Well, that was the legislature.
Right. But now I think there's momentum because they've got things on their agenda that they want to accomplish, and I don't think they want to waste any time.
Well, the first thing on the agenda, of course, is that state budget, and the Governor Kasich will introduce his, I guess, March 15th.
Yeah,
as
but
usual.
Even before that, there's some things that they want to pass.
Yeah. Well, in preparation for the budget, no doubt. I want to say thanks to my guest, Lee Leonard, former dean of the State House Press Corps. Lee, thank you for joining us today.
Glad to be here. It was fun.
Tom Reeder, he's with the Ohio Historical Society. Tom, I'm glad you could join us today.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Appreciate it. In about a minute, we'll turn to live coverage of the inauguration of our 69th governor, don't get ahead of myself, of the state of Ohio. So stay with us. This is WOSU 89.7. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming on the online at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.